Hey everyone, I know you've heard me speak about microdosing and how much I love it. And I'm talking about microdosing THC. I love it. And that's why I love our sponsor, microdose.com. Microdose gummies are incredible. They deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And when I mean just the right amount of good, I mean in so many situations. Anxiety, sleep, focus, pain, relaxation. There are so many different strains and they're really helpful. And I have recommended microdose.com to so many people. And you know what they say to me? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Don't be afraid of microdosing. Go to microdose.com and you'll learn all about microdosing THC. These gummies feel amazing. They taste amazing. I have used them to get me into the zone I need to write. I've used them at night after a stressful day or a stressful show to relax. I have also said to family members, please take a gummy right now. And they've said, oh, good idea. So check it out. Check it out because they're fantastic. And I'm not like a big weed person. I mean, I used to be. And I do enjoy weed every now and then. But I love these gummies. And I take them with me everywhere. So check it out. Don't be afraid. They're all natural. They're fantastic. And you deserve it. So what are you going to do? You're going to do something that is fantastic. You're going to get 30% off your first order. 30% off. That's a lot. Plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Use promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD. It's available nationwide. They deliver it to your door. That is microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD for 30% off and free shipping. Do it. Go to microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD. You deserve it. You deserve it. And you know what else? You're welcome.
Well, I don't see the point in waiting any longer. So let's bring her out. A star attraction. The one you came to see. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Ms. Judy Gold.
I just want to say, welcome to Kill Me Now, everyone. I just had a Kill Me Now moment where I pulled the microphone and bashed myself in the head. So it's really early in the morning, and that's how I started my day. So I know it's going to be a fucking shitty day. But you know what? Well, all right, many new things. First of all, I'm Judy Gold, as you know. Lauren is not here. Lauren, apparently, I just found out, is puking.
Really?
Well, yeah, Patrick's here.
Good morning, Judy.
Yeah, Patrick's the, what would you call yourself? Producer, operator?
Either one of those names works.
Okay, Patrick is a doormat, so this is going to work out really well. and my guest today, I have to tell you, you know I love all my guests, but I've admired this woman for a really long time, and we both did stand up at a time when stand up was the hottest thing in the world. And we both had different trajectories, but I think there was, I mean, I'm just being presumptuous here, but I think there was mutual respect.
And, absolutely.
And, you know, we're going to talk about a lot of stuff, but she's fucking hilarious. She's fucking hot. She's a mom. She's a photographer. She's awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, the incredible Felicia Michaels!
Well, thank you. Wow.
That was a good intro, wasn't it?
I just want to say, Patrick, you always say I'm the man with the plan when someone asks you how do you go by.
I should have. I'm not that quick.
Yeah, especially obviously. You might be my new co-host, Patrick.
Who, where are you from? Not that quick.
Yeah,
I'm from Jersey.
Me too. Where?
Currently, I'm out by Wayne.
Wayne? I know Wayne.
Okay, yeah, by Wayne.
And then, do you like Wayne?
Yeah, Wayne's nice.
Does he have a big cock?
That I don't know.
All right, and where'd you grow up?
Hudson County.
Uh huh.
So it's a little different now.
Did you go to college?
I did go to college.
Where?
Yes. Seton Hall.
Oh yeah, my friend went to law school there.
Oh.
I became a Jew. Well, Patrick, welcome.
Thank you.
Felicia,
yes.
I'm so excited.
I know. To be here.
I haven't seen you. Gotta be 10.
Maybe 10.
10
years, yeah.
Maybe mid-2000s.
Yeah. I know you so long. I know you. Spit curl, Judy.
Oh,
Gold.
My God. What the fuck? Well, you know what's funny about the spit curl is that, I mean, I had it because I was doing a scene in acting class, you know, and it was in the 20s. And then Michael Patrick King was at the Improv. And he's like, you know, I have that curl. We had him on. And he said to me, you know, I have that curl because if you had your own variety show in the 60s, you'd come sliding down a spit curl singing, it's Judy's show. And that was it.
Yeah, yeah.
And
you committed to that spit curl.
I always admire that. Yeah, I committed to, I've committed to everything. Some good, some bad. But Felicia.
Yes.
First of all, your life is fascinating.
Oh, thank you.
Your voice is fascinating. And, you know, it's so funny because I've known you for so long. And we actually have the same manager now.
Yeah.
And
yay for us.
I know. But it's also yay because I feel like he has good taste. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know when you're like, oh, my God, he represents that. What the fuck is wrong with him? But it's so, there's so much to talk about because your voice is sort of juvenile. And yet.
It's lower now, though. It's
yes,
lower.
It is.
Yeah, thank goodness for all that whiskey and weed.
Yeah,
I've been
I'm not kidding. Do you, spill, do you still smoke the weed?
Every once in a while.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
So it's so fascinating because you look at comedian female comics, especially today, who are sexy, girly, not ashamed of their sexuality.
God bless their delicious little hearts.
Right. And I, as I said to Rick, our manager, I said, she was the first. You were the first. First.
In that era.
Right.
In that era, yeah.
But that era, you know, did you ever read the book Outliers?
No.
Oh, you got to read it.
Yeah.
And it talks about all these reasons people are successful. And I feel like now that I'm reading this book, I feel like, you know, I mean, I'm happy for everything we accomplished in the 90s and before we had families.
Mm-hmm.
But now, can you imagine being you then now?
Well,
God, that was a good sentence.
You know, it's an interesting thing because when I started comedy, I became a regular right out of the gate at the Comedy Store in 1985.
Right.
And as you know, at that time, that was the time of Kinison, and that was actually right before he hit it big. And, you know, how lucky are we? Did you ever get to see Richard Pryor come in and work?
Oh,
out?
My God.
How
all
lucky
the time.
Are we
I used
that
to be.
We got to see that.
That I used to be at the store when I moved to LA in like the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
I was there the night Kinison died. Were you there the night Kinison died? I don't think you were there.
I was not.
I was
there,
in the kitchen.
No, yeah.
It was unbelievable.
It was
he
amazing.
Was Pryor was to see these people work out. Now I in the mid 80s was at Catch a Rising Star watching Seinfeld and Belzer, Paula, it was an incredible time. Leifer, you know, because
absolutely.
These people, we wrote. We sat and wrote all day. Our fucking my life revolved around calling on Tuesday and finding if I had
any
spots.
Yeah.
I would sit by that fucking phone.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
You'd sit by the phone. Oh, are they going to call? Are they going to call? Are they going to call? You know, and sometimes you wouldn't get any spots that week and you'd want to kill yourself. And then you'd realize, oh, so-and-so's in from L.A. or that one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You, Felicia Michaels, if you're not familiar with her.
And you're probably not.
That's not true. Felicia, very, very successful comic. American Comedy Award. You were on Full House, Showtime. I mean, my
I had a sweet ass little run. Yeah,
yeah,
for sure.
And let me tell you something. My son Henry, who's 19. He will kill me when I tell this story, but he was obsessed with Full House. And I think it was because, you know, he's been raised by lesbians and those kids were raised by guys. So we went to Florida over Christmas because we're Jewish and we were on JetBlue. It's Henry on the window, Ben in the middle. He's 6'4" and a half, but he has to sit in the middle because he's younger. And then me. And then my partner, Elisa, was on the aisle because she doesn't fucking want to have anything to do with us. And so Ben and I look at Henry. Ben hits me and says, look. And he's got the headphones on, the JetBlue headphones, actually his own. And he's watching Full House and, like, smiling and giggling. And he's like, Mr., I'll beat the shit out of you.
Yeah.
And it's like, I still can't believe it. It's like, it was like the Brady Bunch for me, I guess, or something.
Yeah,
but the fact that it was all right. And
it's probably because when he grew up as a young child at that time, you guys at the time was considered an alternative lifestyle at the time. So I'm sure he identified with that family being an alternative
absolutely.
Family. Yeah.
It's interesting because my family was so dysfunctional and, you know, I had a depressed mother and just elderly parents, really, like older parents. And all I wanted was to run away, you know, to the Partridge Family house, to the Brady Bunch. Like, that was my survival. And it was so interesting to see. Because now kids, all they do is fucking look at their goddamn... I can't... The fucking... Talk to me.
Yeah.
Like, you ask questions 20 fucking times. Answer the fucking question. What? So you are an army brat.
I'm an army brat. My mother was from Berlin, Germany, and they...
I gotta go.
Yeah,
take care.
And they met when my father was stationed in Berlin as a young man in the late 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And they got married and came over. In fact, my father had to... before he was stationed in Berlin, my grandmother... And my father is strong Oklahoma stock. And my grandmother...
You are so not Jewish.
I know.
Like, so many fucking levels.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah.
Did your mother talks like this?
She did, but I never heard her accent because it was my mother. Like, when my mother...
If you were Jewish, you would have heard the accent.
I actually said when my mother passed away, I turned to my cousin and said, God, it's so weird that my mother never had an accent. And she's like, are you kidding me? I can barely understand her because you don't hear it when you're a kid. You know?
Now, for all the Jews listening, I have to ask, she was in Berlin?
She was in Berlin. She was born in 1940. And my grandfather.
That's what we want to know.
Yeah,
what's he doing?
My grandfather was 82 years old and on his third wife when my mother was born.
No fucking way.
Yeah, absolutely. And my grandmother.
So he wasn't
in
Zavor.
No, he died at the hands of Nazis.
Okay, you are righteous.
Right, I can continue talking. Because he owned a private school, and all his teachers were Jewish.
Uh-huh.
And he had a brother who was also quite elderly, and my mother had cousins and aunts and uncles that actively hid Jews in their houses. And
I love you.
And my cousons were killed in concentration camps.
Oh, my God, I am so sorry. That's terrible.
And so the Nazis came and took the Jewish teachers, and my grandfather was 82 or probably 84 at the time, tried to stop, and he was killed. Yeah.
That's fascinating. So how old? Your mother was born in 1940?
She was born in 1940.
And your grandfather
I'll tell you this story.
Yeah, go.
My mother was born in 1940, and because my grandfather had a little bit of money because of the private school, and a lot of people don't realize this, but Berlin was kind of firebombed. You know what I mean? Like,
it wasn't
like Dresden. And I asked my mother, what is the first memory you have of being little? And she said, I remember my mother carrying me running down the streets and all the buildings being on fire and so hot that my eyelashes melted.
Oh, my God.
That was her first memory. But they were very fortunate that they got to take a train to go stay in this village This is how, this crazy story. And the village was at the bottom of Eagle's Nest.
No.
And the so my grandmother, who was very young, because she was the third wife, she got a job, literally because it was war inflation, washing dishes in the kitchen of the restaurant of the hotel.
Right.
And then became the manager of the hotel. But it was the hotel where all the officers would stay to to go as they went up and down or however to go to Eagle's Nest. And I said, asked my aunt, who was 10 years older than my mother, and I said, what was the first time you realized how terrible the Nazis were? And she told me the story about because my grandmother was the manager of the kitchen, mm-hmm. and because those officers stayed at that hotel.
And because she understood German. You know, I mean, she could hear their conversations.
Right, right. Yeah. They were all Germans, yeah. So that she was sent because the kitchen at that hotel got all the first dibs on all the good food because it was the officers of the Third Reich.
Right.
And that her mother had sent her into town. It must have been on the outskirts of town to go get bread at the bakery. And when she was walking back with a basket full of bread, she came across a chain gang of Jews, and they were doing something on the road work.
Right.
And the officers, they were being guarded, not by officers, but by regular Jews, Germans in the army. And that one of the this makes me seriously tear up. And I recorded my aunt telling this story because it was, I just thought that's what I should do because it was so crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But she said one of the Jews kind of broke away from the pack and grabbed at the bread because obviously they were starving.
Right.
And the basket fell. And my aunt was probably 13, 14 at the time. And the officer came, shot the Jewish man dead. And picked up all the bread, even with the blood on it, put it back because they understood that where this food was going. And she said, that was the moment I understood we were on the wrong side of history. And not only that, I went to back to the hotel and gave and told my mother the story. And my mother slapped my face and said, don't ever mention this because the fear. I'm not saying it's correct or incorrect, but, you know, when she told me that story, obviously made me angry that she had to see that. Obviously made me angry that people had to live, the Jews go through
right.
this terrible, hideous thing. Made me so angry as a fucking woman
right.
that the women, who, no matter what side you were on, were meant to endure this kind of
right.
shit at the hands of ignorant and stupid fuck. I get really angry about
that. Oh, please.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah. And so she told me that story. And then she told me also a story about how after the war, there was martial law and that the Germans didn't, the civilians didn't want to believe that they backed this government that did
right,
these
hideous right,
things.
Right, right, right.
And although a lot of them understood kind of what was going on, a lot of them weren't really in the know. It wasn't
right.
like today where someone could take a picture with their phone and then 30 minutes later, everybody in the world knows what's going on, obviously. So she said that the Americans from all those films you see of those death camps had to take the films. And one of the things of martial law is they made everybody, they made these makeshift tents where they mm-hmm. showed these films and everybody had to go see the films.
Mm-hmm.
And how people who were watching the films were crying
right, right.
in agony, the ones that didn't understand what
right.
the fuck was really going on. And you know, it's so
It's
intense.
Unbelievable
yeah.
because my mother, she was born in 1922, and she was supposed to go to Berlin for
Jesus,
her.
You were the last egg.
Oh, please. And my father was 48 when I was born. So, wait, your grandfather must 18 what?
I don't know. He was 82 when my mother was born.
In 1940. So that's
yeah.
40. And then you have 42. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you 1858?
Isn't that
my
crazy?
Grandparents were born in 1882, 1888, and 1892 and 1896. And I say that on stage and people are like... about that.
Right, right.
But it's interesting because my mother's supposed to go to Berlin because Berlin was the fucking bomb. I'm not, no pun intended, but it was
it was the center of fashion and culture and
she was Berlin in the 20s and early 30s, absolutely.
So she was supposed to go for her 16th birthday, 1938, and they couldn't. And I just, you know, I want to go back. I want to go. I want to see this. But I, it's so interesting because there were so many people who did know, you know, who were, you know, you look, absolutely. You go to the concentration, you see that they're right there. So, but there was, I mean, I think there were people who were ignorant about, the fact that your mother has to see someone shot, you know.
Well, it was my aunt.
Your aunt.
It was my aunt.
All right, yeah. Same thing.
Yeah. But, you know, it's an interesting question when you really start thinking about, like I read yesterday that there was a guard in one of the concentration camps.
Oh, yeah, now 94.
94 and being put through the whole process of court and all
that.
He
was a guard at Auschwitz.
Auschwitz. And then, and obviously, terrible, terrible.
Right.
No excuse, absolutely whatsoever. But then when you start thinking, you know, if you're a 19-year-old guy,
right,
and you're living in this society,
right,
you're taken away from your family to serve, right, in you know, the mm-hmm. army or whatever the fuck you were mm-hmm. doing, what would you do at that time? You know, it's an interesting moral dilemma. Obviously, you and I would, you know, obviously you, but anybody would say you wouldn't be a part of that.
Right.
But there wasn't a process of sticking your hand up necessarily when you're at the age of 18, 19, 20. No excuse. He should be obviously,
right,
absolutely put on trial. But then it's not like today where people talk about everything.
Right.
Was
right.
it spoken about? What, you know, what could you do if you didn't want to participate?
Right.
What could you do? Obviously, I would like to think I would have got the fuck out of there, or I would
right.
have done what my forebears would have done and hid Jews in my apartment.
Right.
Given
like
up their
these
life
guys
to do
could
it.
Have
yeah.
done that, too.
Right.
I mean, there were
yeah.
plenty of
yeah.
them that didn't do it and that witnessed this and participated
oh,
in
absolutely.
It and didn't run away.
Right.
And there are so many Jews that did run away. There was an underground. I'm sorry, but
I'm not saying it as a defense.
I can't believe this is a fucking comedy podcast.
I know. Are the best ones when
I
you don't
know.
Really talk about them.
I know. No,
and,
that's
and
what I
don't
do.
I don't mean
yeah.
it as like a defense of him. I mean it as, God, when so many things were not discussed.
Right, right, right.
And the unluck of being born in a family where you didn't have intellectuals who could have a big fucking discussion
right.
about what is right and what is wrong.
Right, right, right.
And, you know, it makes you realize how much we have changed in humanity.
Right. You but
know?
Now, look at the fucking Trump. Look at these people. They
I
say,
"No, I know."
We're going
cannot.
Backwards, Felicia.
Yeah, I would.
So
think
wait.
So,
so you're
ways.
An army brat.
I'm an army brat. Sorry.
So you're no, I love it.
Digress.
So your father was in Berlin. Met
uh-huh.
your mother.
Met my mother.
Where'd they meet?
I think my father was. He's from Oklahoma, so he used to.
That's okay. Get it, Patrick?
I get it.
Yeah.
And so I think they met where he did. Was in a little army band like Elvis,
right.
but not
right.
Elvis. He was a
right.
very handsome man. And I think they met at a show that he was doing. You know, they
right.
had little side gigs or whatever. And they met and they got married. And
how old were they when they got married?
I think, you know, 21.
Right, right,
yeah,
right.
You know.
Can you fucking imagine?
I can't even imagine.
Like, when I have cousins who got married. At, like, even when my friends' kids now are like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, no.
Yeah,
ew.
It's terrible.
Yeah, go.
Yeah. so they met. And my grandmother on my father's side told him, if you go to Germany, you do not come back with a German wife. Because people didn't like the Germans,
oh, of
obviously.
Course.
You know what I mean?
Hi, I'm Felicia's mother. And how is she doing in second grade?
Yeah, yeah. And so my father wrote my grandmother and told him that she was pregnant. And then
that is disgusting.
I know that he had to marry her.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they came back to the
can't
States.
Can't believe they had premarital sex.
I know. My grandmother was like, where's the baby? And they're like, she wasn't pregnant. And so he got in trouble by his mother. But
oh, he did it.
Yeah.
So, all right.
And my stepmother, also a German.
What is with your father?
I know.
What is wrong with him?
He likes a bossy bitch, I guess.
I can't believe it. He could have someone, you know, he's a little... your house must have been so clean, no?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
OCD.
Yeah.
So you went from, what was the longest you stayed in one place as a child?
I would have to say maybe 2 or 3 years growing up, because now when they understand in the service that you can't just be uprooting people.
Right. Especially the kids.
Yeah, it's bad for the kids. And so I moved around every 2 to 3 years and back and forth. And my dad did 2 tours of Vietnam.
Oh, my God.
We were in Northern California in Stockton at that time.
Fun!
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, it was...
So what was it like?
It did prepare me for comedy.
Oh, please. Yeah.
I was actually... I had a drink last night with David Feldman, and he was like...
What? I was fucking sitting at home.
Well, you should have been there. Funniest guy on the planet.
Fuck him. He was on the podcast.
He's an awesome guy.
I love him.
And he was like, God, comedy for you must have been so hard back in the day. And I was like, no, I grew up in, you know, an army brat where we moved around all the time. So to me, it was normal business.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
I stayed at one place. And every time I'd have to, I mean, I went on the, you and I, we went on the road.
Right.
There were so many comics who either...
There weren't that many women that did.
That said, and I just wanted to be a good comic. It's like when I think of Mitch Hedberg, who you were really close with, I think of he just wanted to be a comic.
I
wanted to be a great comic.
Nobody wants to be just a fucking comic anymore.
Judah was on, and he's like, you know, I'm doing stand-up, and people are stopping me like, oh, what are you working on? He's like, stand-up, and he's like, and what else? He's like, stand up. What the fuck? What else do I have to? You know, it's unbelievable.
Right.
It's like you're a loser if you're. All right. So that shifted
because before when we did stand up, because I do a lot of photography and all that kind of stuff.
I know.
And people would say, or I had a manager who would say, yeah, don't talk about that photography thing. This is back in the day.
Yeah.
Just talk about your stand up because people are going to think you're not
serious about
your stand up. And now people are like, no, don't talk about your stand up. Talk about everything else.
Right. But it was okay for guys to talk about all the other shit. Oh, I was a lawyer and I did this and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Felicia.
Yes, ma'am.
I have a sponsor, which is very exciting.
That's awesome.
So, and I kind of love this sponsor. All right. So, you know how important a mattress is. Like,
mattresses.
I hate to sound like a fucking commercial.
They're super important.
But I got to tell you, like, if I'm in a hotel and it has a shitty mattress, I'm done. I'm like, my neck hurt, my back, like, I can't. And then you go home and you're sleeping on a good, it's like.
Right.
You know.
I hear you.
And so there's this new company called Leesa. L-E-E-S-A. Leesa. And they're like the Warby Parker of mattresses. Mm-hmm. So you order the mattress and it's only online. And they start at $525, which is really good. And it's one of those foam ones.
Uh-huh.
You know, the ones that are like, you know, that keep you cool. Like my son, Ben's, I swear to God, sleeps at the window. It's 19 degrees outside and sweats all the time. So it has like 3 layers of foam and it makes you not. You know, a lot of foam mattresses make you sweat. So this one doesn't make you sweat. And it has that like memory foam thing for the body contouring.
Right,
yeah, I know you like that.
Yeah.
I know you like that. Anyway, so, and the other great thing is after each 10 mattresses they sell, they donate one.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that to plant 1 million mattresses that, wait, we also plant one tree. Oh, they plant one tree for every mattress sold, pledging to plant 1 million mattresses by two. I love how they write 1 million mattresses. It's 1 million trees, you fucking idiots. Anyway, the Wall Street Journal called them the Uber of mattresses. I mean, they're really good. They're like those fuck, you know.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, no.
Anyway,
yeah.
So get this. This is how important I am now. If you go to Leesa.com, L-E-E-S-A, and you use the promo code GOLD, I can't say code GOLD, G-O-L-D, GOLD. Because what's my last name?
Right. Gold.
You're so good at this. I love it. They will get $75 off. That's pretty damn good.
$75 off. A tree gets planted and one gets donated.
Yep.
Holy
it's
cow.
It's unbelievable. And it's a great mattress. It's only online. So go to Leesa, Leesa.com. Get a really fucking, and it's delivered to your door. In a box, I swear to God, and you. I have a friend who did this, and you open the box, and it like comes out, and it just blows up. Like, it's
wow.
amazing.
Wow.
It's and it's a great mattress because I've slept on one by myself. So go to Lisa.com, plant some trees, help the environment, use the code GOLD, G-O-L-D, and you'll get $75 off. And sweet dreams, ladies and gentlemen. So what was it like when you're a kid and you move and you have to go into the lunchroom as the new kid?
Well, because you're in a situation where everybody, because you're going to schools that predominantly have military children, so you're in the same boat with everyone else. So even though it was difficult, it wasn't as difficult. And sometimes you would go to school with someone that you knew in second grade in
right.
Berlin, Germany, or Munich, and
right.
then you would see him in eighth grade
right.
at, you know, outside Fort Carson near Colorado Springs. You'd be like, oh, yeah, you.
Oh, so, this is yeah. good, Dankeschön. Yeah. So, how, what is your, who, all right, why can't I, this menopause shit, even though I have my period,
uh-huh.
I have my period.
You do?
And I'm 53 years old.
Wow.
Okay.
God, you're fucking bragging. I love it.
Thank you very much. Your oldest friend, the
yeah.
friend you've had for the longest, how many years is that? And how when did you meet? Your oldest, the person you've known the longest.
Well, this is the one thing, being a, I'm going to get to that answer, but I'm going to say, when you grow up as an army brat, especially back in the day, I don't have a lot of childhood friends.
That's what I'm talking about.
Right. So I would say my oldest friend was a girl I met in a strip club when I was 18.
We're getting to that, ladies
yes.
and gentlemen. We're getting
and,
to that very soon.
Comedian Alan Steven.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
That's
yeah.
amazing.
Yeah.
I wondered who the comedian was.
Yeah.
But
he's my bro.
What are you doing in the strip club? So your father left.
My father
remarried, with your brother.
Took my brother.
Mm-hmm.
And
what was that? Like, he's a guy, he's coming with me, or?
It pretty much was. It pretty much was. And my mother had a lot of mental issues.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a reason she wanted to get the fuck out of Germany. And there
right.
was a reason her family was like, you should get the fuck out of Germany.
Well, wouldn't you have mental issues if you grew up during that time
right,
period?
But she had a lot of, absolutely,
right.
number one. But number two, she had a lot of emotional and mental problems.
Right.
And I, from the age of around 11, 12, it was just my mother and myself.
Ugh, and you had to take care of her.
And I had to take care of my mother, and we were on welfare because my father didn't pay child support. Not that he made a lot of money, but back then men could, you know,
yeah, of
beat
course.
The system. And so I grew up on welfare from about the age of 11 or probably 12.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mother had a massive stroke.
Oh my God,
yeah.
I can't!
And was in a wheelchair.
Oh my God.
And
how old
had,
were you when she had the massive stroke?
I would say I was around 14.
Oh my God, I can't even believe you can talk. Go.
And but my mother also had Crohn's disease.
Oh God.
And in that time.
You sure she's not Jewish?
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
In that time, they didn't know. Exactly. In the 70s, it was pretty much like Frankenstein, how they treated Crohn's disease.
Right.
And it didn't help her because she had emotional and mental issues that at that time people were like, no, it's not a physical thing. You're bringing that on by being crazy. So the responsibility of the disease was so laid on her, and it didn't help her.
And here you are.
Yeah.
You're a teenage girl trying to take
yeah.
care of a sick woman. And your father knew she had a stroke and all that, right?
He did, yes.
Yeah.
But he was stationed then in back in Germany, so.
So your brother had a completely different upbringing than you.
A completely different upbringing than I did. My brother also had a lot of problems, too,
uh-huh.
Emotional and mental, and
right.
Genetically, I think, given to him, of course, by my mother. Not given, but, a bit, you know, sadly.
So you sort of, quote-unquote, are kind of the lucky one.
You know what? Because my brother passed when...
I'm sorry.
Yeah, quite a while ago. And the amount of guilt that you have, A, when you're co-witness in life,
right.
peels over. But B, the guilt of why...
Survivor guilt.
Yeah, why did he have all these issues and I didn't, you know, and I'm mentally pretty sound.
Right.
You know, and just realizing that as a young kid, you know, because it was, I would say it was pretty apparent when he was younger that he had problems.
Right.
And I don't think my dad really understood, and he took the wrong one.
Yeah, right.
But when he took me, he told my mother, I'm going to, you know, I think he left me because he felt someone needed, he had to leave her someone. So she
and you
be
were
all
probably,
alone.
He probably right. knew instinctively you right. were the strong one.
And quite honestly, my mother was a black sheep in the family on her side. And all, quite honestly, her family was done with her because
right.
to them, she married an American. And she betrayed the Fatherland.
You know, the Fatherland!
The Fatherland, you know, so.
Oh, my God,
so like,
this
you're
story.
On your own, girly girl. Yeah,
oh.
So we were absolutely left alone. And my mother was very suicidal and tried to kill herself many times. I remember coming home from school, and she'd be all passed out with pills all
oh
over the place.
Oh, my God, you poor thing!
No, I don't. You know what? That's the hardest thing about sharing a story of yourself when you grow up in poverty, when you grow
yes,
up with an
yes,
ill parent,
yes.
is the look in people's eyes, like the fucking look you have now of complete empathy, which is great that you have that ability to feel empathy for other people's pain. But that's the most uncomfortable about unburdening
right,
yourself.
Right, because you are a survivor and you
right.
look at it, you've processed the whole thing.
Right.
I do that. I feel that too.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I wasn't on welfare. You know, your story is so intense, but it, you know, the feelings, you know, my feeling of getting up every single morning, going to school mm-hmm. and being called Bigfoot and Sasquatch every 5 fucking minutes, that I can't walk down the hallway, that kids are
right.
pushing me again, you know,
yeah.
that, you know, it's,
now
yeah,
I'm having that look for you.
Well,
like, oh, I'm
but
so sorry. You
and
to
that's
go through
me.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
yeah.
no, it's fine.
Right.
But, you know, that that everyday humiliation of, you know, the feeling is as intense. The situation is different. And I don't want anyone to feel sorry for
right.
me.
I can't say that I felt humiliated as a child
right.
because of that, but I can't.
Right, no, that,
yeah,
I don't
yeah,
think
yeah,
it
yeah.
is.
But for
humiliated.
You, yeah,
yeah,
yeah, for you, because that was, must have been terrible. But I can say that then people didn't see you. They just saw your circumstance.
Right,
they
right.
They didn't see you. And it got to the point where I can be a very callous person sometimes. And that's why comedy is so wonderful for
yes.
me.
Yes.
Where I remember coming home after several attempts that my mother would try to do. And judging, like, you know what, I think I can finish my math homework before I call the ambulance. You know what I mean? Like, that's mind of a child. You
right,
know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
I got a test tomorrow.
Right.
I got to get on this math
it's
homework.
It's so amazing
yeah.
that you were into school, you know?
Right. Well, because I didn't have to be home then.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And I love my mother with everything in my heart.
Of course.
So, but being able to talk about this. Oh, and by the way, the first time in my life, I'm actually able to talk about it.
Right.
You know, because I kept it hidden for so long.
Right,
you know,
right.
When people saw me, because I'm blonde-haired, blue-eyed, they'd be like, oh, you must have been a cheerleader in high school.
Oh, I know, right.
And I got a lot of shit because people would presume that about me
right.
or assume that about me. And so not true.
Right.
Yeah.
It's so funny, you know, because everyone does have a story. You don't know what, that's why your one-person show that you're working on
yeah,
is
yeah.
going to be so fucking amazing.
Oh, thank you.
Because what you see is not what you get.
Right.
And that's the same, I think, with most comedians.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. But every once in a while, you see what you get.
I know. And then you're like, this one's a hack. But
true that.
So you were a good student.
You know what? I was not an A student. I was a solid B student.
But all right,
I had
but
a
look.
Lot of stuff going on. And
really?
Also, yeah. Also, at that time with Crohn's disease, my mother had I bet by the time I was 14, probably 20 operations all over her body for other things too, as well as Crohn's. And she had an ileostomy,
mm-hmm.
and it was so archaic.
Right.
And at that time, and she called it George. I can't believe I'm talking about this.
George,
her little guy.
Ah, that's hilarious.
And the hardest.
I'm surprised it wasn't like, you know, Frederick.
Yeah, I know.
You know?
And that is so funny that I told you that.
George.
George. I don't know why she called it George. We never knew anyone right. named George, but she called it George. And because, especially when she became handicapped, the way that they had the process of how the bag went on it, and I know for some people this is untasteful,
right?
But the process of how it was actually adhered to one was so archaic,
right.
And it would burst because your body, when you have an ileostomy, mm-hmm. it's basically kicking out your acid in your stomach
right.
and your digestive
right.
juices. So it's very, it eats away at everything.
Right.
And so George would bust because you would have this piece of plastic that you would literally have to friggin'
right.
glue to your side. Now they have adhesive, whatever,
right.
but it was pretty serious glue. And you would have to put things, it would be like glue and then powder and then this weird, like foamy plastic stuff. You know what reminds me of that stuff is like, when you buy the stuff to put in your bra and make your boob stand up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
One of those inserts that's kind of squishy. It's
like
that.
Not so, that I've ever used them.
Yeah.
Patrick, stop looking at my tits. Go ahead.
So it would all this chemical reaction where it would all glue together and it would go onto your body, but
right.
then the body juices would eat at it. And so the hardest part physically for me at that time, and by the way, my mother, God bless her soul, the fact that she was like a fucking physical experiment
right.
for doctors, it makes me so angry.
Right.
But as a child, it was my job because she couldn't help herself to clean it all up.
Oh, my God.
And the hardest part, and by the way, I of course had, obviously I make jokes about
right.
how I was pretty callous about certain things.
Right.
But other things, when your parent is suffering, you don't care. You
right.
help your parent. But it was my job, too. I'd have to take like this stuff and try to get all the chemical off the hard piece of plastic
right.
which actually fit over George and I would have to stay with hot water and scrub for like sometimes up to 2 hours where my fingers would actually be bloody because you had to clean it all off in order for the adhesive to work again. So I don't know why I'm digressing
that
to this, but it was
so
very hard for my mother. It was very hard, very hard.
And as a kid, to be able to realize it's hard for her and not a narcissist, you're not like some narcissistic, like, man, it's all about me,
is
pretty amazing. So, who did the did you do the grocery shopping?
Everything.
Was there any home health aid? Any kind
there
of.
There was for a small period because we were on welfare. There were a couple programs here and there, but they would always be cut or put away. I think we had a home health aid maybe once for 2 years, but that meant someone came in once a week
right.
to just check up.
Right.
And,
Did your mother ever yell, Felicia, George is full?
Yes.
George is full.
Yeah, it was not.
I thought that was funny. George is full.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Patrick. all right. So you graduate high school.
I graduated high school, and when my mother had a stroke at the age, I think I was 14.
Yes.
Things got really bad.
Right.
And she was, my father, I believe, was in Germany at the
mm-hmm.
time. And she, it was really terrible. And we were living outside of Colorado Springs that time. And she had to go to a rehab facility after they had stabilized her. And, I talk about this in my one-woman show. My mother had a ring that was my grandmother's ring.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever money was tight, which was always,
mm-hmm.
all the time, she would always pawn that one ring. And then she would save up for a year and get it out and
right.
repawn it. But I was the one at 12 years old from the time of 12, go to the pawn shop and pawn
right.
a ring. And she got really had the stroke, and I had it in front of me because she had not been feeling well and was at the hospital, and I had to go to get money for the electrical bill and to get that fucking ring that I needed to pawn to pay the
right.
electrical bill, and she stroked out in front of me.
No!
Yeah, and it was at the hospital.
I cannot take anymore. Go.
But this is why I have a problem when telling this story, too, is because at the time, when you're a kid like that, it kind of, it affects you, but it bounces from you because you're resilient.
Yeah.
So I remember there was probably like 5 to 7 doctors in the room at the time. And when it happened, there was a nurse. They all fled the room because they knew what was going on, and they couldn't look me in the eye.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I have a problem with that. When
right.
people can't look me in the eye, that is a big issue for me. And,
right.
and I, as I was writing my one-woman show, I was like, fuck, that comes from when this was going down,
right.
that they couldn't tell me
right.
because I was a child,
right.
that, and they couldn't bear to look at me.
Mm-hmm.
That it made them so terribly sad. And I understand that, and mm-hmm. I have empathy for that. And but as the nurse pulled me from the room, I pulled the ring off her finger, and all I thought about is like, thank God I'll get to the pawn shop
right.
before it closes so I can pay the electric bill. And then she was shipped after that to a rehab facility in Denver, and she was gone for about 8 months.
Where were you? Home alone?
I was home alone. Home
at 14?
At 14, yeah, which, you know, it
in
is.
In a trailer or
no,
in a house?
A housing complex where the majority of it was people
Army.
On welfare or oh. Army people, yeah.
Wait, so you're alone?
I was alone, yeah.
At 14?
At 14.
And the state had no idea?
The state, every once in a while, a social worker would knock on the door, but I'd hide under the bed and stuff. Because I'm so glad I did that because I didn't have to face the horrors that a lot of children in foster care homes,
right.
especially back in the day, faced. And there are great, wonderful.
But were
foster
you
homes.
Sad? Were you like depressed and sad? And
I can't say that.
Jealous of other kids who had both parents at home, or
no, I can't say that.
Wow,
I really can't say that. When you're in that, it was more about just survive to the next.
And what about
day.
Your teachers?
You know what that. Was something that was always very quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Never spoken about really at school. Never.
So
and,
they
and we lived. You have to understand. We lived in the in a smallish town outside a bigger city,
mm-hmm.
but in a part of town where my friends weren't even allowed to go. You know what
wow.
I mean? Like what?
Because
mother
it was
of
like,
a
yeah.
14, 15 year old is like, no, you go to that side of town
right,
where all
right,
those GIs
right.
are doing drugs right. and the welfare people live. You know what
oh
I mean?
Oh my God. You're it, such a survivor.
I am.
You should go on Survivor.
I should go on.
Or The Amazing Race.
Yeah,
I bet you'd
right?
be good on The Amazing
I
Race.
I probably would.
Wow. Living
yeah.
alone at 4. And you knew you had the druthers to get up. Make yourself breakfast, make yourself
oh, yeah.
lunch.
Go to school,
buy
yeah.
groceries.
Well, and school meant eating because they had programs where
right.
I could eat.
And did you stay at school as long as possible? If you needed like a permission slip?
Just sign it, yeah. It was, and back, you know, those days was different than
right.
it is now where, you know, we're going to text your parents and
right,
call,
right, right.
you know, both parents and everyone's
yeah.
on an email chain. You
right.
know what I mean? Those days were just
oh,
like,
my God, you could just forge letters. I was, you know,
yeah,
Felicia was very sick.
A community means more than the street you live on or where your home is on a map. It's the relationships, not the location, that matter most. You may have noticed your community has changed. Old friends have moved away, you don't know any of your new neighbors, or you just don't feel quite as comfortable as you used to. The Good Samaritan Society can help. Our senior living communities offer more than a place to live. They offer a place where you can feel at home again. Housing options that fit your needs, a staff that genuinely cares, and neighbors you can call friends. Our mission is helping those we serve feel loved, valued, and at peace. Let us prove it to you so you can get back to enjoying your community and everything that comes with it.
To learn more about the Good Samaritan Society, call 855-GOOD-SAM or visit good-sam.com today. That's 855-GOOD-SAM or good-sam.com.
So you then become a stripper.
Well, what happened was...
Come on, guys. How fascinating is this? How old were you? Were you 17?
I had just turned 18.
Just turned 18.
And what happened at that time was my mother was in and out of the hospital.
Wait, did your mother go to your high school graduation?
No.
Did anyone go?
No. I'll get to that. Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
No.
Sorry.
Because I want to be able to color
yes,
it in
yes,
as
yes,
much
yes,
as possible.
Yes, 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 yes.
You know, because this is a big part of the one woman show.
Yeah.
There are so many children that help they're handicapped and are caregivers to handicapped, whether emotionally, mentally, or physically, parents. And the amount of pressure on me at that time, because when your parent becomes handicapped, when you're at that age, it is one of the hardest things
to watch.
Because it's your parent that you love. It's a hard thing to share.
Right.
But when people have a stroke, emotionally they change.
Right, of
you
course.
Know, and they're going
their brain
this,
changes.
Their
yeah.
brain changes. And so I became the parent to my mother.
Right.
And that was really hard because, like you said, I was cooking, I was doing everything.
Right.
And I had lived on my own for, I think, 8 or 9 months. So when she came home, there was this fantasy for her that I would go back into the child position.
Right.
When it was A, I'm taking care of you.
Right.
And B, you know, now I'm 15, almost 16, and fuck you.
Exactly. Having a good time here, and now you've, you know, sort of disrupted my life.
And when someone becomes handicapped, they go through, not everybody, but my experience with my mother was they rely and lean on you so heavily, it blocks them from helping themselves sometimes.
Right.
And it would literally be like if something was within 5 inches of her reach, she would call me from my room. Mm-hmm. I would have to go give it to her.
Right.
It got to the point
where she
was trying to passive-aggressively trying to, A, help herself, but control me in a sense.
That's when the texting could have come in handy.
That's when,
Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I had went, because this is all leading up to this, I had went with one of my first little boyfriends to go see a Santana in Pueblo, Colorado.
Oh, yeah, Santana. Baby! Santana! Yeah.
And I had spent the night and had come early in the next morning, and she had God, what do they call it when you urinate in a bag too? So now she had not only
catheter.
She had a catheter.
God damn it! Come on, Patrick, that was good. You didn't know what the fuck it was. Go ahead.
And she had bed sores. I mean, she was very incapacitated.
Right.
And so I came home and I walked into her room, and there was blood all over.
Oh
her
God!
Bed, right.
I can't.
And but this was a big moment in my life because it was my understanding at that point in my life. You know, some people dig a hole so big for themselves they can't get out of.
Right.
And if you're standing on the edge, you are a very dangerous position to slip in with them.
Right.
And I called.
God, you're smart. Go.
And she said to me, Mom, because the phone was right by her head. I'm like, Mom, why didn't you call, you know, an ambulance? And she said, I just wanted you to see that you can never leave me like your father did.
Oh, my God. And I thought it couldn't get worse. But it's going on here. It just keeps getting worse and worse. And I'm never complaining about my childhood again.
And at that point, I called the ambulance and I ran away from home. And I eventually called my father. And he had been stationed and was living back in California. He had gotten out of the Army and was living back in California.
How old are you? You're 15?
I was
16?
I think 16 at that time. And I went, lived with my father outside of Los Angeles, and I did a continuation school. I stopped all contact with my mother because at that time I recognized this is not
healthy.
Okay. This is not okay. And I'm not servicing her by being at her beck and call.
Right.
And
it's not good for either of you.
I got to get the fuck out of here.
Did you feel guilty?
Absolutely.
Oh, my God. I can't even fucking imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. And then she
and your father. Father just took you in.
Of course he did. Yeah, of course he did.
And did you ever call him during this period and say, Dad, you got to fucking help?
That is when I called him and said, because I felt so guilt ridden about leaving my mother. You know what I mean?
Of course.
I would assume now, and now I have a great relationship with my father. We went through a lot, but we have such a solid relationship. And at that time, you know, I felt like everyone had turned their back on her. Her mother.
Right, of course,
saying,
her family,
You know,
you married
an American, and you got out of here. So, and then...
Auf Wiedersehen.
And then when I went to stay with my father, I went to a continuation school.
Right.
So I literally graduated high school. I think I was a junior then, within 4 months, because you could work at your own pace.
Right.
So I was like, I'm fucking going to buckle down. Me and all these people
right.
who are in continuation school
right.
because they're doing drugs and shoplifting.
Right, right, right.
But I was like, I'm going to get the fuck out of here.
Right.
And I actually graduated high school, but you know, there was no graduation because you worked at your own pace.
Right.
I got my degree and I went back to Colorado because my mother came back out of another rehab.
So you were gone for how long?
Probably maybe 4 to 5 months.
And at that time you had no contact with her?
I had no contact. And then at the end I started talking to a lot of my friends who still were friendly with her.
Right.
And I knew she was back home. And in turn, it actually was a good thing because she did say to me, no, I needed to learn how to take care of myself.
Wow.
And so when I came back, our relationship
was different.
It was different.
Evolved.
Even though I was still the parent, it was different. But when I came back.
Wait, did your father at any point during that 4 months say, I'm going to go check up or I'm going to call the hospital or the rehab or
you know,
I'm.
No, he did not.
Okay.
And about a year ago, I said to my father, why did you even marry my mother?
Mm-hmm.
And he said to me, she could just be a hell of a fun ride until she wasn't, you know, and she had a lot of mental issues.
Right.
I have memories of my mother. She had like what that Sybil kind of stuff. Like,
right, right, right.
Dissociative.
Wow.
She was very dissociative where I wasn't talking to my mother.
Right.
You know, I have many memories of that.
Right.
And so now as an adult, I can see it from his point of view.
Right.
Like, sometimes you gotta fucking save yourself.
Right. But you have a fucking kid.
Well, sometimes, you know what?
But you're a mother.
I have
now.
A mother. I have a mother now.
No,
yeah.
you are a mother.
I am a mother.
You
yes.
are a mother
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
And there's so many times in my life where I think back. I mean, none of it is anything like your upbringing.
It doesn't matter.
Right.
It doesn't matter.
But
pain is pain.
Right. And you look at your kids, like when I think of parents who've left their kid, like I no way, you would never leave your kids.
I would never leave my kid, but also, I mean, look, here is a guy from Oklahoma.
Right.
No education. Had to go in the army because
right.
he shoplifted and they were like, jail or army. Goes
right.
in the army. Meets. My mother had an amazing IQ. She had like a genius IQ.
Well, hello, look at you.
Well, that's very kind. But so he meets this beautiful, you know,
blonde. Do you know what your IQ is?
It's not that like my mother. My mother had an amazing IQ. And so mine is just average. So
yeah, that's what you think. Do you have to stop at 11:50?
No, I did my call-in.
I love you.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, good.
So I look at it from my father's point of view. I mean, she was beautiful, funny. I get that from her.
Right, right, right.
Bright,
mm-hmm.
you know, but...
It's so too bad they did not have the medicine they have now. You know
exactly,
what I mean?
Exactly, exactly.
It would have been a whole different... All right,
yeah.
so...
So when I asked him that... You know, why did you marry my mom? And he told me, you know, because she could be a hell of a fun ride until she wasn't. It was a great moment between my father and me because I understood that. I understood because who was he going to talk to about
right,
it?
Right, right, right.
I had a crazy wife at home. Who fucking wanted to
right,
hear that
right.
in 1967 or
right.
1974? No
right.
one wanted to hear that shit.
Right.
You know, and so, in fact, I remember when I was living in New York about... 15 years or so ago, I never spoke about how I grew up. I didn't
right.
even tell my husband. He
right.
knew a little bit about the stripping, but I told that story to one of my girlfriends about my mother in bed with the blood, and she was like, "Your fucking mother, blah, 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 blah." And I was like, no, let's have this understanding.
Right.
When someone becomes handicapped, I can say, having gone through that experience, seeing my mother and how she handled it, not great, but she had a lot of problems.
Right.
I still, to this day, can't say if that happened to me, I wouldn't act like that. Because you don't know
right,
until
right.
you're fucking in the
right.
know.
Right, I
know. What I mean?
Like, my mother just passed in June. But...
So sorry.
Thank you. The end, the last, you know, she could not walk and she had... and it started, actually, you know... My father died in 1990, so it started a couple of years before this, where she would lose her balance, or they'd be walking down the street and then she'd start walking in circles, or she would start slurring her speech. Mm-hmm. And they never knew what it was. I mean, we took her everywhere. And, you know, as you know, mm-hmm. From having a sick mother, that
right.
women are hysterical. Oh, yeah, it's nothing. You're hysterical. And, you know, finally, they found that she had apparently from a fever when she was a kid, her cerebellum was atrophying very slowly.
Wow.
But I cannot tell you how many doctors I took her to. And I remember this, the one thing I remember, and I think it's because, I mean, come on, you're so sensitive. When you're a comic, you're just
hypersensitive. Yeah.
I remember, and my brother and sister are very, they're not emotional. They're not, you know, they're just.
They put a lid on it.
They do too, and I think kind of too much, but that's just my opinion. But I remember the one day when I looked in her eyes and I saw the fear, fear. And that was the hardest thing where I, you know, because you want your parent to be your savior, to be the person who, you know,
absolutely.
Is on a pedestal, you know. And I remember realizing her hysteria, her constant, you know, her depression, whatever, you know, the way, you know, it took me till, I guess, in my 40s or late 30s to look in her eye and say, no, it wasn't that she was upset with me or this. She was afraid. And the seeing fear in your parents' eyes is...
Yes.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And that's how you forgive. I mean, you're such a forgiving person.
I'm a pretty forgiving person. And to almost to my detriment, where I will give someone a million chances because I always try to walk in someone's shoes. It's probably how just luck of the draw I'm built, you know?
Right.
You know, but probably also from the experience that I have. Like, that person might be a dick, but let's take into consideration
this
and this. But sometimes to the point where, you know, I give it a little bit too much.
Now I'm like, you know what? Now that I've hit 50, I'm like, all right, I've worked so much shit out.
Yeah.
If you're over 50 and still talking about, you know... It's like, come on.
That's how I feel, too.
Yeah.
Especially when you have kids.
And
I had kids later on in life. It's like, as soon as you have kids, then it's like, nope, cut and dry.
Yeah,
you're
sorry.
Crazy. You can't be around my kids.
Right.
Done.
So you're a stripper.
So when I came back to Colorado to be with my mother, I had graduated high school. And I think at that, I might have turned 18, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
My timeline's a little goofy on that.
Mm-hmm.
But because my mother lived in housing that was paid for by the government, and I wasn't in college, I mean, I was just lucky to get out of high school.
Right.
We were told that she would lose her housing if
right.
I lived with her.
Right.
So there I was, barely 18, lived in we had no car,
mm-hmm.
lived in a town that was 20 miles to 25 miles outside of a city.
Uh-huh.
There were no jobs.
Right.
There was no bus service
mm-hmm.
to the city.
Mm-hmm.
And I got married
mm-hmm.
To a young GI. And
oh!
Yes.
Oh, my God!
Hard to believe. Just like all the women,
I would say
90% of the girls that I grew up with.
Was he cute?
He was fine.
Was he smart?
And, you know, he's GI. You know, I mean, I can't say he wasn't.
Right.
I absolutely can't say he
Were
wasn't.
Were you attracted to him?
I was attracted to the idea of I wouldn't live on the streets.
Right.
You know what I mean? But
Do you think he loved you?
And it was in an era. Of course I think he loved. Of course. And I think I did love him, too. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, but you're 18.
Right.
I know. So we got married, and then he became violent. You know, I think he was 19, 20.
Right.
And the second time that he hit me, I was like, I am not going to get pregnant and be in that situation.
Right.
And I answered an ad and went and did a wet t-shirt night at the... Peppermint Lounge in Colorado Springs,
the
Colorado.
Peppermint Lounge.
And by the way, I have to tell you, when I was 12 years old and a kind neighbor would take my mother and me to the welfare office or whatever, we would drive by the Peppermint Lounge. Always fascinated by the Peppermint.
Really?
Yeah, like I was old school tween, you know what
yeah.
I mean? Like,
I used to have a joke in my act about if you ever want to piss your mother off, when you're driving in the car with her, stop in front of the local strip joint and say, oh, can you just wait here? I got to run in and get my check.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. All right. So what, he didn't, he was violent, but you didn't get, did you get really beat up?
He hit me twice. And the second time he hit me, I mean, you know.
Wait, the first time was like, oh my God, I'm dying.
Yeah, yeah,
dying,
that whole thing. Yeah. But then the second time was like, yeah, this is.
Go fuck yourself.
Go fuck yourself. And so.
And then you got divorced, right?
I got divorced, yeah. But
did you have to see him again?
I saw him. I think when I moved to LA years later, I saw he had a lot of problems too in life. So
right,
and I wish.
God,
him well,
you're
yeah.
so like. Oh, he had a lot of problems.
Well,
all right.
Everyone has a lot.
I
of problems,
know.
You know.
Okay, so you're stripping, and you must meet. I mean, you're probably making a shitload of money.
Well, I did the contest, and I remember that I took my top off. Mm-hmm. And
did you feel weird? Like
no,
when you first
know,
took your
because my mother was German.
Right.
And, you know, she was very European and
right.
Sex
oh,
was...
Oh, right. So the hairy
savior
armpits
of
and the
my
tits,
mother
yeah.
was that sex, in those days, sex was very shameful. She was never like that.
Right, right, right.
Sex was never... We had... my mother could talk about anything. We had very open
right.
conversations about it. So sex wasn't a shameful thing
right.
with my mother. And that... She had wonderful parts about her, and that was a really mm-hmm. great thing that I loved about my mother. So I didn't care. You know?
Right, right.
But I do remember I got boobies later in life, so they were pretty freshy.
Right.
Like all my girlfriends got boobies when they were 14. I
right.
got them like 17 and a half.
Right, right.
And it was like they were pretty delicious. I'm not going to lie. My ass not so
you
much.
Know, they're still not bad at all as
well,
a lesbian.
You know, push up.
Yeah.
Push up bra.
Yeah.
So then I remember I was doing the contest. And I chose my song, AC/DC's Highway to Hell, because I figure if you're going to do it.
Right. Just fucking
you know,
do
have
it.
Have a
yeah.
theme song
right.
going all the way. And this man came up to me and he threw money and it he made it rain. And
right.
it felt like it was raining love. I swear to God,
right.
I was doing that whole like 80s
right,
you know,
right,
Bruce
right.
Springsteen, Courtney Cox dance.
Right.
And I literally was like, oh, I have found my
right.
calling. Like
right.
it was like I am in sold. And so I did that. And
I mean, you couldn't have been a waitress. So, all right. So you go.
I did find a job as a hostess at a restaurant.
Oh.
It was after I had stripped.
Right.
And, they fired me because I had been a stripper. So.
Oh, fuck them.
Yeah, yeah. So.
You know, guys can go fuck at prostitutes and do
absolutely,
whatever the fuck
yeah.
they want.
Yeah.
All right.
It's not held against their soul.
Right. So you're a stripper. I bet you met the most incredible people, you know, strippers with unbelievable stories. No?
Yeah, and it was different then because that was probably 1982 or so.
Right.
Number one, the first night I did stripping, I met a stand-up comedian. That's how I became a comedian.
So he was
just in the audience.
As a patron?
As a patron, and he came up to me and asked me how.
That's disgusting!
And,
yeah.
And that's how I got
Wait.
Into comedy.
So let me just, so you take off, you didn't feel shamed or like an object or.
You have to understand,
I,
at that point in life, especially in that era,
mm-hmm.
I had no power.
Right.
And when I took my top off.
You had
and
power.
And I looked down and I saw the desire in men's
right.
eyes. That was fucking intoxicating.
Right.
And that's why when people are always like, ah, strippers and, you know, you're so held down
right.
in life. And yeah, there are absolutely those stories. But for my story, it was 100%. I see my path now.
Right.
I won't starve. I won't
right,
ever
right.
be held
It was
down
like
by
everything's
going to
be okay. I got it.
It was a complete relief.
That was part one of Kill Me Now with Judy Gold featuring Felicia Michaels. Please tune in next week for part two, also with Felicia Michaels. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Thanks for throwing us a good rating on iTunes, reviewing us, telling your friends about us, posting on your social medias and whatnots. If you like a show, it all really, really helps out. Supporting our sponsors. Thank you for listening in general.
And every everything was wonderful. I'll see you soon. Thank you for the visit. So long.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.